He is very intelligent and crafty, and although he too can see into people's hearts and minds, he doesn't exploit this ability to an excessive extent. When he bows before me, it's not the bowing of a chancellor before his queen. On the contrary, he is bowing as a man before my feminine beauty and looking at me with a covetous eye. Impudent fellow! He knows all the while that I can read his thoughts and all his feelings. But then I think of Tahotep's words, "In every living creature there is the striving towards divine unity. The male seeks the female, and the female seeks the male." That is the attraction between the two forms of manifestation of creative forces. In this light I can understand Rukhatu. This power is working within him, and it's not his fault that he finds me pleasing. That's the reason for his impertinence. If it weren't for this force working within him, he wouldn't bother about me. And in my secret heart of hearts, I'm really not angry at all that he admires my beauty. After the dressing ceremonies, the ladies of the court and Rukh accompany me to the pharaoh. How beautiful, how very beautiful my father is in his festive robe. Just like a god incarnate. Then we all leave the palace, going out to the waiting chariots. Some building or other is going to be dedicated today with an inaugural ceremony. Father and I step into the golden chariot, the chariot with the lions, and father takes the reins from the attendants' hands. When I was still quite a little girl, father was already taking me for rides in his chariot. I had to stand behind him, and he explained to me how to keep my balance by elastic body movements during the joggling, bumpy ride. I had to learn to keep my entire body quite relaxed in order to be able instantly to follow the movements of the chariot. When the floor beneath me was rocking to and fro and bouncing up and down, I had to be able to stand on my toes, keeping my feet, my knees and the rest of my body flexible and quickly able to make the necessary counter moves. These chariot rides were always very funny, and at first we had plenty of occasions to laugh at my awkwardness. At the start, father let the lions walk slowly, gradually quickening their pace to a trot, but the moment they began to run, the chariot threw me back and forth and I was naturally afraid. Instead of keeping myself relaxed, I grabbed frantically at father's hands, robe and belt. Father laughed heartily, and with unending patience he showed me again and again how to stand upright. Finally, I learned how to make the right corrective movements and was able to stand upright without hanging on to father or the edge of the chariot. It was wonderful to be able to stand as securely and as apparently motionless as further while the chariot raced over the ground. Often our rides were quite long. It was a thrilling feeling to be speeding along behind the galloping lions. The lions also enjoyed being able to get in a good run, and not only we, father and I, but the lions too would laugh with joy. Through these chariot rides my body became muscular, powerful and as resilient as if I had practiced wrestling every day. Every single muscle was used, forced to co-soft-ordinate and react instantly with every movement of the chariot. It was a constant dance, although invisible, as it was the floor underneath, not we ourselves that was really dancing on and on. When I was 15, father taught me how to drive the lions. What a wonderful feeling it was to have these magnificent, gigantic animals in my power. They responded to the slightest impulse of my will, so supremely sensitive that they immediately did everything I wanted them to without my having to move the reins. But father never let me drive them alone, not even my favorite lion, a real personal pet to the point of being jealous, because the lions were always highly independent and only initiates could control them. I hope when I'm initiated I'll be allowed to drive the lions alone. Now en route to a public festival, father drives his lions with all due dignity, and I stand beside him as his wife. I am proud of father. He is still very young, strong and magnificently beautiful. His body and his handsome face radiate tremendous power and concentration, especially now when he is driving the lions. Standing and balancing on his toes, his body absorbs every movement of the chariot, and he seems to stand motionless, as securely as if he were the sun god himself. We reach our destination and the boring ceremonies begin. I don't like these public festivals. They are always the same. Huge crowds, marching soldiers, people of rank exclamation mark, and for a time that seems interminable I have to sit still, practically motionless, watching the ceremonies until everything is over. Then I have to exchange friendly greetings with the people of rank, while reading the many stupid and treacherous thoughts behind all the humility and flattery they wear on their faces. How lucky that among all the many hypocrites in the court, who seek only the satisfaction of their vanity and desire for power, there are a few truly upright and loyal co-workers for Father and Dahotep. There's an officer, for example, whose radiance is so bright it seems almost golden. Who is he? I ask Father in a whisper. His name is Thistha, Father whispers back. He was recently made an officer, but he has such splendid qualities, as you can see from his radiance, that I want to make him a commander. The ceremonies are always the same, the only difference being that we sometimes have to sit on the palace terrace, sometimes on a great dais, and at other times on the temple terrace. Sometimes the ceremonies are for the dedication of a new building, sometimes to celebrate an expedition returning from barter trade with neighboring countries and bringing back the wares obtained abroad. Then at other times we take part in a harvest festival or various temple festivals, and these I don't like for the simple reason that the great crowds haven't the slightest idea about the meaning of the ceremony. Instead of worshipping God in the various forms in which he manifests himself, as represented in symbolic pictures, the ignorant masses worship the symbols themselves. But in time even the most boring ceremony is ended. At last we can go home and be ourselves again. No, I wouldn't like to be the pharaoh. The affairs of the country don't interest me at all. Legally I should be the successor to the throne, but Father never talks about this and pays very little attention to preparing me for the tasks of a pharaoh. I know that Dahotep and Further are able to raise themselves up above the plane of time. They can see and experience the past and the future as present. I too am beginning to develop this ability, and often I can see parts of the future, but whenever I'd like to see my own future, only a dense mist appears before my eyes, hiding everything. But Father knows my future, and since he is not yet treating me as a co-regent, I imagine I may never become a pharaoh. I have already had this presentiment on my own. It doesn't worry me in any way, as I'd rather be a priestess in the temple. But curiously enough, I don't see any pictures in the future which would show me as a priestess in the temple either. I see only mist. After such celebrations, I am always happy when I can get back to the temple the next day. I always feel comfortable in the pure spiritual atmosphere of the temple. Telepathic exercises. One day Tahotep sends me a message saying I should come to see him that evening. As I stand before him, he says, "You've passed your preparatory tests so far quite successfully, and now you may try to establish psychic contact with another person. You will find you get better results with these exercises after sundown. That's because the sun's rays have a stimulating effect on those nerve centers and glands which serve the physical manifestations of the spirit and thus tie the consciousness to the material plane. The sun's rays have a contrary effect on spiritual manifestations. After sunset, this effect ceases, the consciousness can free itself from certain nerve centers and withdraw into the spiritual plane. Living creatures go to sleep. Going to sleep means that the consciousness withdraws from the body into the spirit. And since most people are not able consciously to reach the deeper levels of the spirit, they lose consciousness, they fall asleep. With practice one can develop the resistance of his nerves to such a degree that he can remain conscious even at the deepest level. In this way the nerve centers and brain centers which are at rest during the daytime become active, receiving and conducting the vibrations of the spirit, the self. In this way you can establish contact with someone at a distance, that is telepathic contact. It's better for a beginner to practice after sunset so that he doesn't have the effect of the sunshine working against him. Later on he develops the ability to make a telepathic contact anytime. In this exercise, Just as in every exercise in concentration, you begin by fixing your entire attention on one single thought. Concentrate your thoughts completely on the person with whom you want to establish contact, allowing your imagination to help along. With your eyes closed, you imagine the person you want to reach, seeing him with your inward eye, his body, his face, his eyes, and imagining you are he and he is you, until you actually get the feeling that his hands are your hands and your body his, until you achieve complete identity with the person you are trying to reach. When you've reached this point, think the thought you want to transmit clearly and concentratedly. Think it with intent awareness that you are the person concerned and that this person in you is thinking this thought. This exercise has three phases. First, you practice in the presence of the person whom you want to reach telepathically, and during your practice the person concerned tries to receive your thought. Later you repeat the same exercise at a distance and at a time agreed upon in advance, with both of you knowing that the other is going to concentrate on him. Finally, you will transmit a message through telepathic contact without your partners knowing about it in advance. These three phases make up the positive half of telepathic exercises. In this work, you are the one who wants to send a message. The negative half of the exercise consists in your developing the ability to receive and understand telepathic messages. This exercise too consists of three phases. At first, you make yourself receptive and empty in the presence of the person from whom you want to receive a message, then alone at a time agreed upon in advance such that you know who is going to concentrate on you and when. Finally, you must be able to receive any telepathic message without knowing in advance who is going to concentrate on you and when. In time, you develop to such a point that you respond immediately to every message from a distance, at any time and from any person. No matter what you're doing, you'll feel that someone is concentrating on you, and you will hear his voice within you. Later on, you will not only be able to hear the person's voice, you will even be able to see the person you're in contact with. His form, his face, and especially his eyes will appear before you just like a picture in a dream. When you reach this level in your progress, you won't feel the fetters of matter, of your body, in such an oppressive fashion, for by then the isolation you felt by virtue of being imprisoned within your body will be greatly reduced. You will be able to enjoy the freedom of the spirit while you're still living in the body. When you want to create a telepathic connection, you'll find you will succeed better at night. Then the consciousness is not so strongly occupied with one's own thoughts. The person concerned is less isolated. He is passive, and your telepathic message will be better able to reach his nerve centers. Most people's nerve centers are in such a latent state, so poorly developed, that it takes a very powerful effort on your part for them to be able to receive a message at all. When they're asleep, you can get them to dream about you and pick up your message in their dream. Practice will reveal all the laws of telepathy to you, including how to know immediately whether someone is busy and how to isolate yourself when you are busy concentrating on something. Only beginners disturb each other. Every evening you are to practice these exercises according to my instructions. And now let's do a bit of practice right away. Seat yourself opposite me, close your eyes, and try to communicate a thought to me. I sit down opposite Tahotep and concentrate on him. I imagine that I am Tahotep, and I induce within myself the feeling that my hands and feet, my entire body, are his hands, his feet, his body. Then with utmost concentration I think this thought: I, Tahotep, get up, step over and stroke the hair of this young person, myself. For Tahotep's hands radiate wonderful strength, and I am always happy when he lays his hand upon my head. Almost instantly Tahotep stands up, lays his blessed hand upon my head, and strokes my hair. So my concentration was successful. Or was it? After all, Tahotep can read my thoughts even when I'm not trying to transmit a thought to him telepathically. Good, he says with a smile. I was able to read your thought not simply because I can read your thoughts anyway, but because you were really concentrating very well. Your lion would have felt too what you wanted. My lion, father of my soul? I can believe that. But a person? Patience, my child. In time everything is possible. Now let's try it the other way around. I'll transmit a thought to you. Make yourself empty and receptive. Tahotep sits down and I do as he asks. A moment later I hear his voice from within me, as if coming out of my own heart. As soon as you've achieved sufficient self-control in all the twin characteristics, it will be time for me to reveal the last secrets to you before your initiation. I open my eyes and ask with joyous expectation, does this mean I'm drawing near to my initiation? Tahotep smiles, since you heard my message, you are ready to receive it, except that you still need to perfect yourself in self-control. I jump up, throw my arms about his neck, and kiss his cheeks with resounding smacks. Tahotep embraces me and says with a loud laugh, you see how you can't control yourself. You haven't been able to resist the effect of spiritual unity. You've experienced the union of our spirit, the sources of this unity flowed into your body, and now your body wants to participate in the joy of union. But don't forget that what is divine on the spiritual level because it corresponds to the laws of the spirit becomes satanic on the material level because it runs counter to the laws of matter. Union in the spirit is possible, but union in the body is not. Two bodies cannot occupy the same space. Because of the longing for unity, people try to unite their bodies, and therefore slide down into sexuality. Nature exploits the longing for union, the yearning for the long-lost paradisiacal state in order to beget new generations of people. The great disappointment is only that sexuality cannot create union. What's impossible is simply impossible. And all creatures, in addition to being tired through the drain on their energies, are sad after sexual intercourse, simply because the soul remains unsatisfied. The longing for the paradisiacal unity continues. And nature goes on using this unfulfilled yearning to produce new generations of offspring. For you it would be very, very desirable not to let the yearning for union flow unhindered into your body. I am protected enough to be able to resist your entrancing beauty, but you may meet younger, inexperienced men who can't resist you when you throw your arms around their neck. Naturally my advice is wasted, says Tahotep with a smile. What you really lack is experience. And it's this lack of experience I can now thank for your vehement expressions of love. Father of my soul, I say, you're not angry at me? Tahotep smiles. No, my little child, I'm not angry at all. As long as you only throw your arms around my neck, everything's all right. But be very, very cautious with other men. The higher you rise in spirit, the more irresistible your radiations become. You don't need to get nearly so close to a person for your power of attraction to be effective. Be careful that you don't lead men to their downfall. Father, I asked amazed, do you mean I'm not spiritual enough? You know how successful I am in my exercises. And Mentapta is very satisfied with me too. I already know how to control my body and my nerve centers to a very high degree. I've passed all my preliminary tests. Yes, said Tahotep. Spiritually you are already very awake and in control of your body. But at the same time you are very free and lacking in caution on the physical plane. You are neglecting to bolt this door, not because you are not able to, but because you don't always want to. You're not protecting your body sufficiently against the high frequencies of spiritual vibrations. And that is a constant danger for your nerve centers. When your spiritual forces enter your body, you conduct these high frequencies, untransformed, into your lower nerve centers, and this means there's a danger of your higher, finer nerve centers being burned out and destroyed. That would be too bad for this fine instrument. You have enough self-control when you want it, but you often relax your grip on the reins out of pure enthusiasm. Sometimes you simply don't want to exercise self-control. Be on the lookout, dear child, and always alert. Oh Tahotep, my dear master. How early you saw what was unavoidably coming and how much you wanted to save me. But the best advice can't change an experience into experience, and my inner lack of balance and self-control had to be brought back into equilibrium through painful experience. The future and sunrise. A long new period begins in my life. I examine my every thought, my every word, my every deed. I reflect and watch to see whether, at the right time and in the right place, I am really giving expression to the divine, and not to the satanic. And in this constant watchfulness, this continuous self-observation, I discover how undisciplined and unbridled and sensual, in a word how personal, I still am. How much longer is it going to take me to reach the point where I don't allow myself to be overpowered by passions, where I no longer identify myself with my external impressions, but always remain master of all my physical, spiritual and mental forces? During this period of my preparation for initiation, I spend only my mornings in the temple, coming back to the palace after my physical and spiritual exercises. In the afternoon I take part in public life. Excursions by ship and chariot alternate with travel and inspection trips to various settlements. But these excursions and the conversations centering around them really bore me stiff. It isn't that I don't like company, oh no. I enjoy very much being with people, but with people who are my kin and who have something to say. But these people are so different from us who have our lineage from the sons of God. Of course we too have human blood and our race too is no longer pure, but we consciously live in the spirit and are not so materialistic as the sons of men. It's almost as if they have completely forgotten that they, in themselves, are free spirits and that their body is only an instrument for the manifestation of their spirit. These people are so identified with their body that they live in the illusion they are only body. When their body needs food, they believe they want to eat. They are hungry, and instead of taking in food under the watchful supervision of the spirit, they act as if they themselves were eating, rather than merely being observers and governors of their body. They eat just as greedily as animals. I watch them during feeding time and often feel like turning my head away so as not to see their beastly behavior. I too let my body eat with good appetite. I too supply my stomach and digestive organs with pure forces, getting all the taste of the food I eat so that my body can absorb all the precious forces in the food, but how could I identify myself with this? My self can't be hungry, since the self is not matter but the master of matter. It's true my consciousness receives a message from the body to the effect that it needs nourishment, and I'm aware of this message in the form of a feeling of hunger. But the self in me neither eats nor drinks. How could I forget even for a moment that these functions are only necessary in order to maintain the body in health? The only thing myself really has to do with all of this is to observe watchfully and control what enters the body and see to it that teeth and tongue do their work properly. I can never understand how people, after eating like beasts, can say something like, "My, but that tasted good to me." To whom did it taste good? Don't such people know that it tasted good to their palates? These poor people are such slaves of their physical desires. We simply don't understand each other. But Father and Tahotep say it's our duty to remain among them and awaken higher desires and aims within them. And all the while Father knows that the people of rank within his court are mostly only interested in how and where they can get a well-paid position, so they can get rich as quickly as possible and satisfy their hunger for power. And another thing, these sons of men go hunting for wild animals, using their intelligence to kill innocent animals, and they're even proud about it. They should be ashamed. These people are worse than the animals they hunt. Animals only kill because of hunger. But people kill for passion's sake, because killing, war and hunting give them pleasure. But Father says that people are still undeveloped and we mustn't judge them by our own standards. Another thing, these people attach endless importance to their family tree. When a person has one ancestor more from the lineage of the sons of God than someone else has, he mentions it as often as possible, and shows contempt for others with less brilliance in their ancestry. That's why they pay so much attention to the family a daughter is descended from, and the family of the young man she marries. How ridiculous! as if they didn't really know that earthly life is only a journey between being born into the body and leaving it at death, whereas the self is the same in every living creature. Only the body can have a lineage. The level on which a person stands is determined only by the level of his own intelligence. Often enough, a person with several ancestors from the lineage of the sons of God still has a lower degree of intelligence than someone else with far fewer forefathers in the divine race. When I'm among these people, I feel as if I were among the dead. They seem to move, speak, eat, drink and carry out functions of the living merely because natural forces are at work within them. But where is the conscious spirit that controls and guides these natural forces, not only in the body, but also outside in the universe? They don't know they have the ability to guide these creative forces. They're so blind they see only the external form of people, and they haven't the faintest idea that I can read their thoughts, their feelings, see their whole soul, their inner being. They lie to my very face for the simple reason that, not being able to read my thoughts, they believe that I can't see theirs either, and that I don't know their thoughts are very different from what they say. They don't realize that a light creates a kind of insulation around them and develops a dark shadow, like smoke, in their radiation, and this dark blotch is not only ugly, but even smells bad. My pet lions are quick to smell the foul scent of these liars. Whenever one of them comes near, they start to wrinkle their nose, then get up, give a person concerned a contemptuous glance, and stalk off majestically. But with no such easy way to defend myself, I have to keep on talking with such people just as if I didn't clearly see their hypocrisy, and even smell it. It's much more pleasant to be alone with Father. He's had a charming house built for the two of us, in a shady garden by the seashore. Whenever he has some free time, we go there by boat on the Nile, taking only a minimum of servants. This gives us a magnificent rest, coupled with deep enjoyment of the endless sea and the peace of each other's company. Father and I both love the sea, that great mother of the earth, with childlike devotion. We're both of us so very happy in our little house by the seashore, and our life there is closely linked in many ways to the sea itself. Here we experience perfect liberty, immortality, eternity. We take advantage of every opportunity to be close to the sea. We go for walks together along the seashore. We go looking for mussels together, and sometimes we take a little boat and row out quite far, all by ourselves. There's an immensity about the beauty of the sea when the air is calm and the water beneath us is as smooth as a mirror. But there's something just as grand about being out among all the waves when the wind's blowing them up high, and we feel all the exhilaration of being hoisted skyward by the crest of one wave, then sliding down into the trough of the next. We strip off our clothes, jump into the cool water, and swim about our boat. Once, after such an invigorating swim, as we were sitting on the beach, I asked Father, "How is it possible that people can be so blind to spiritual truth? What's going to happen to the world when the government gets into the hands of the sons of men, as Tahotep once told me it would? I'm frightened even to think of the consequences of the dominions passing into the hands of self-seeking people obsessed with a craving for power. I'm beginning to be able to sense what's coming in the future. My exercises in the temple are awakening my inner sight, and my powers of clairvoyance are growing from day to day, but still I don't see everything as clearly as Tahotep and you." For a long time Father sits looking out over the water. Finally he says, "Yes, the earth must go through a very difficult period for many thousands of years. As you already know, the pure-blooded sons of God all departed from this earthly plane long ago. And their sons who have been born as a cross between the two races but who still carry within themselves the possibility of perfectly divine manifestation, are also gradually disappearing from the face of the earth. In order for the higher powers to be propagated through hereditary channels when the pure-blooded sons of God had already departed from the earth, their sons, who had inherited their abilities from their fathers and who had achieved initiation, again took daughters of men as their wives, and this went on and on for generations until this intermarrying had penetrated into all levels of life in both races. But as long as the waves of creative force are moving in the direction of further materialization, the earthly element always plays the dominant role in heredity.